All right, guys, welcome to a new Cyclone Fanatic podcast today as we continue to meet some of our friends from the pork producers here in the state of Iowa. And I got a couple of characters in here today. I've got Gene Noam. Is that accurate?
Yep.
I don't want to mispronounce your name. There's no more disrespect than mispronouncing or misspelling a man's name.
Just don't put more than two syllables in it.
Okay, there you go. And Bill Winkleman are in here with me. And we've been discussing, like, okay, are we going to talk cyclones or are we going to talk pork? And I've been told that Bill here is the cyclone expert, correct?
That would be correct, yeah. A lot of history, all the way back to graduated from Iowa State in 83 and been pretty much a season ticket holder in football since then. And,
all right.
And most of the years through that in basketball as well.
So. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And Gene here, so Gene and I have a connection. You're a jackrabbit?
I am a jackrabbit.
Class
of 79.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So, but you're wearing a cyclone shirt.
Well, underneath it is my jackrabbit.
Oh, okay. You're wearing them both.
The undergarments.
Rocking both the teams.
There you go.
First
football game, I got to wear blue.
So that's where I was going with that.
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you go to all the Iowa State games?
I do. I go to all football games, and I split some basketball tickets as well.
So, like, you'll really be rooting for South Dakota State in Jack Trice Stadium?
I've got to.
It's not right.
Because if South Dakota State beats Iowa State, it's like a really big loss, right?
South Dakota State lost to Iowa State about seven years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't pretty. I just got to make a little bit better showing. Better than 44 to 6, I think is what it was, or some sad number.
I can handle that better than when your brother comes down from South Dakota and roots for Oklahoma. So
I can accept South Dakota. What are you letting this guy do that for, Gene?
I don't know. Big O.
Yeah.
For all seriousness, how is South Dakota State this year going to be? They got a decent program, don't they?
They're going to build. They're going to be okay, but they're going to lose a couple of key players, in particular Dallas Goedert, who's a tight end.
Tight end, yeah.
He's projected to go first round this year.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. That didn't happen very often.
Yeah, a guy that was a walk-on from Northeast South Dakota. So get on YouTube and look for Dallas Goedert.
Okay.
Goedert. And you'll see the pretty cool one-handers.
Wow.
In the end zone. Yep.
So, but Iowa State, in your opinion, should win that game? I mean, I just don't know anything about South Dakota State yet. I know a lot about Iowa State, but.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, they were in the playoffs last year. They did pretty well. I mean, it'll be just like when we have to play you and I, right? They'll come ready.
Yep.
It'll be a big game on their schedule, and they'll come ready to go at us.
How much do you guys hate North Dakota State?
On a scale of 1 to 10, we get to 10.3. Now, I will say, North Dakota State have some fantastic fans.
They travel
with a lot of people.
They remind me of Nebraska fans in the 90s, except at a lower level.
Oh, yeah. You'll see those green and gold buses, and they're all – I mean, when they're on the road, man, they travel.
I don't think they're quite as snobbish as Nebraska.
I don't know.
I mean, Nebraska and Yankee fans – to me, are similar. They always wonder why they have to play the game. You should just give it to them, you know? I mean, just give it to me because I deserve it.
Yeah. So, Bill.
Yeah.
So your buddy Gene here is a South Dakota State guy.
Yeah.
And Gene, you moved to Central Iowa in
2000.
Okay, so you're not a lifer.
No.
How did you turn him into this guy?
Yeah, so.
How did that work?
Yeah, so we started working together pretty shortly after he moved to Ames. And so we had that opportunity. And so I think he was definitely moving to Central Iowa, he was looking for things to do on the weekend. And so he was starting to get into tailgating, and then we adopted him pretty quickly. So
God
we became,
you.
Yeah, we were, you know, we were working together and then became really good friends. And then the opportunity to actually tailgate together. And so we've been pretty consistently together in the B6 parking lot there for the last 15 years.
All right, I got to stop by B6.
Yeah.
There's got to be a lot of pork there.
Across the street. Oh, yeah.
And Joyce has given us the pork flag to fly. So we have big blue pork flag, short box Chevy pickup.
I'll get you guys a Cyclone Fanatic flag if you want to fly that too.
We'll do that too.
We would do that.
Yeah.
We have four holes in the box that we could put all kinds of flags in.
And you currently have how many flying?
Only one.
Just the pork flag?
With just below it is Iowa State.
Okay. Yeah. I'll add to the third if you guys accept
it. Here we go. We're in it.
All right. That sounds good. How, Bill, you're a longtime Iowa State fan.
Yeah.
Much longer than even me. How excited are you about the football?
This is unprecedented for me.
Okay, because I like to bounce it off guys who have been around longer because I'm really excited, but I also don't have the long-time perspective that a guy like you does.
Yeah, so when I started at Iowa State, it was Donnie Duncan. And then I was also there for the first year of Johnny Orr. In fact, he came to our Christmas dinner. He was out promoting getting people to get – he came to our fraternity, you know, because he would – Rami were really aggressive about trying to get people to show up the games because they didn't show up to the games back then, right? So it was, he went to everything he could go to. He was such a promoter for the program, right, those early years. But back on the football, I survived, you know, Donnie was pretty good, Crutchfield, some of those guys. But then we went through the Kreiner debacle, right? And then we got pretty, which was pretty painful, right? If you're going to cheat, you should at least cheat well enough to win.
Yeah,
right?
So don't cheat and still suck.
Yeah. So that was pretty painful. And then you know Dan was fantastic, right? Everybody got behind him, and everybody was behind Paul. But this difference that we're seeing now that Matt's bringing, just in terms of the level of the talent and where that talent's coming from, right? Him going in and getting kids out of the Big Ten. Country.
Isn't that cool?
Is so cool, right? Because I mean, it used to be we'd get some Iowa kids and then we go to Texas, Florida, and California, right? And now we're starting to see kids come from Ohio and we're starting to see them, you know, come from the upper Midwest. So that's really just the level, and you could just see the difference in the level of talent on the field. So this is, I'm a fan of the Chicago Cubs, the Minnesota Vikings, and the Iowa State Cyclones. So, there's not a lot of, now, the Cubs have kind of come along for me, but I've suffered through Cyclone fans. We suffered through a lot, but this is pretty exciting.
I'm a Vikings fan too.
I know.
I feel your pain.
That. So
I feel your pain.
I'm starting to get a little more excited. We're starting to get a little more excited about them. So
it's a big year, Chris.
Are you a Vikings fan?
Oh yeah, Gene? Yeah. I was there for the Saints game, man.
Yeah, I was there too. So where were you sitting at?
I was in the north end zone.
With the opposite one that they ran.
Opposite corner.
Okay, because I was in the same end zone, but the same corner.
Oh, man.
So, but I was in the upper. I was in the cheap seats. Yeah. Like, many cheap seats to that game.
I've told my brother, told people that I've never hugged my brother, but I did that day.
Do you guys follow Travis Hines? He writes for the Ames Tribune.
Tribune.
Yeah, we went together.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we were kissing at the end of that.
With a minute to go, my brother and I were going through Drew Pearson and drops. And
oh, yeah.
It, losing it in the four times in the Super Bowl. And so, but it was like, whoa. And then I said, let's go to Philadelphia. Thank God I never followed through.
I know.
Yeah,
that would have been horrible.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not just horrible for the game, but I guess you get treated a little rough out there too.
Yeah, we actually have a guy at the radio station who's from Philly. And I told him early in the week, because he's a big Eagles fan, so we're jawing at each other. And I told him I was thinking about looking into a last-minute ticket or something like that. And he's like, don't do it.
Don't go.
He goes, if you do, don't wear purple. I did that once. I went to a Chiefs game, Chiefs-Vikings game, and I wore purple. And they were both terrible. Both teams were horrible. I was down working at KMA at the time. So I'm like, oh, the Vikings are there. It's an hour and a half, two-hour drive. May as well. And I don't think I've ever been treated so poorly in my life. Just when you wear that opposite color to an NFL game, I can't put a finger on it, but it gets pretty grotesque.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where, college, I think college is so much different, right?
I mean, I do too.
I went down to the K-State football game last fall, right? Lose by 1 point, but everybody, even after that game, right, we're dejected. We walk out of there. People are still respectful of each other. I've never been... I mean, it's just a whole different thing at the collegiate level than it is at the professional level. Yeah. It's so much more animosity and hatred that breeds into that professional game.
I think there's a lot more alcohol consumption, too, at the NFL. I know that people are drinking in the tailgate lots, but I feel like, as long as you're not in the student lot or something, it's a lot more tame. I don't. The whole Iowa State, did you guys?
Best NFL football game I've been at.
Which one's that?
Lambeau Field, Brett Favre beats the Packers. Best one I've been
at. Oh, man. You were there?
I was.
We killed them, too. Yeah. Like, it wasn't even close, was it?
Yeah, no,
if I remember
really
correctly.
Good. It was, I don't know. It was elative because I was in full garb and amongst the golden
green. How did you guys feel about Favre wearing purple? I had a really hard time with it.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it was about results, right?
Yeah, so
if
exactly.
If he got us closer to getting back to the Super Bowl, I was probably going to accept it. But, yeah, it was pretty difficult.
I have such a love-hate relationship with my Vikings fandom. I don't know if you guys have heard me tell this story, but I bet you'll appreciate it. So my dad's a Cowboys fan.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, and so was I as a little dude. And then Herschel got traded.
Mm. Oh.
And I said, see you, Dad.
I'm following
Herschel. I'm going with Herschel Walker.
How'd that work for you?
Not well. if you think about it, so the reason I became a Vikings fan was the same reason that the Cowboys dynasty was created and
absolutely.
Our possible dynasty was dissolved.
And the Vikings went in the hole for 9 years.
Yes. Yeah. Like, think about how terrible of a decision that was for me.
Players
at a young
and
age.
The players and the picks that they got as a result of getting Herschel Walker. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. I don't know.
The middle time.
The Iowa State thing, and this is where I kind of wanted to bounce it off of you, Bill, because it seems to me like everything's more sustainable now. Right? Even in the Rhodes era, like, I think we could win 6 or 7 games here, but I never felt like we can sustain this for multiple years in a row.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just the way that the whole thing is built from the inside out. I mean, this defensive line's, I think, going to be the best defensive line we've seen at Iowa State in 10, 15 years.
Oh, yeah. I think the talent level is just upgraded so much. I'm really interested to see if Leo, you know, what he can become.
Yeah.
Really
He's
see him on the field would be big. The Samoan, right? I'm looking forward to seeing that guy actually play.
Tongamoa.
Yeah. And, you know, and then the guys that we got returning, and then he's building up. Yeah, I think the history of Cyclone football has always been you kind of go along at that 3 to 4 win, and every once in a while, right, about once a decade, you get that 6 or 7 opportunity and you get excited, and then it always would drop back, right? So you'd always have a couple of key players. You know, Troy Davis came along and really elevated that from a Kearney. You know, you had these moments in time, but they were never sustainable moments, and this feels very different, and I sure as heck hope that he stays with us for an extended period of time.
Right? Well, and I'm working on a long column right now where I'm writing about the facilities. Mm-hmm. And you'd be able to go even farther than I can with this. But I remember when I was in college, I got there in 2003, graduated in 07. And at the beginning of that, the team would practice in the rec center, the lead rec center. And then, I remember going to one of Greg McDermott's first practices that was open to the media, and it was in State Gym.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy to think how far all that's come since like 04.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, you got stories that well surpass that, I'm sure, as far as how far everything's come since you were there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all those – so we played a lot of pickup basketball with it. Our fraternity was like half a block away from State Gym, right? And so all the football players in the offseason played pickup basketball in State Gym. Right?
Wow.
And – you know, they used to use Clyde Williams Field, right? I mean, back in the day. I mean, it was crazy. And you would just see those guys around campus so much more than you would now, right? Because they spend so much time between the academics and the guidance they get there and from the workout, everything being out around the stadium. I mean, it's just
– I want to know if you ever blocked out a defensive lineman.
What I did?
Did you block out a defensive lineman and pick up basketball?
Oh, no, man, we stayed away from – so intramural – yeah, you probably did intramurals,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Six feet and under league champion right here.
Yeah, so when I was – I don't know how they do it now, but it was A, B, C, and D, right? And so we won B 1 year, we won C a couple years, but we never messed with A because A was all the elite athletes, right? You didn't mess around with those guys.
No. Yeah.
You didn't even play – I mean, they wouldn't even look at playing us in a pickup game, right? They would have kind of like their own court that they pretty much would dominate, so –
yeah, most of those guys could, like, walk onto the basketball team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See time.
Yep.
They're dunking and all that stuff.
Matter of fact, back in the – who was the coach before Fred?
McDermott.
Yeah, before McDermott, I mean.
Morgan?
Yeah, Morgan. Back in the Morgan days, we were begging for him out of the crowd, weren't we?
Yes.
Bring him on. We need you.
Man, the Morgan days seem like they were just yesterday to me. They were really a long time ago, but it seems like everything, there was so much drama that happened in that like 3-year span, the Larry stuff, through when Wayne got fired. And like a lot of the stuff public, a lot of the stuff not. Like that was a really, so Jamie gets that job, and man, there he had a lot of decisions to make there
within
a couple of year span.
Yeah.
Because when Morgan left, he took all those guys, you know, and they all, like Greg, listen, he made a lot of mistakes at Iowa State, and I don't deny that. He didn't have much of a chance, though. I think when he took over, he had 3 scholarship players.
Yeah.
When he got that job. And that's just really hard to dig out of that type of a hole.
Yeah. But he was also there long enough that you would have thought.
Yes.
I thought eventually he would get there. And then you look at the success he's had at Creighton.
Great. I mean,
it's just like he's like really good at the Missouri Valley level, but somehow could get that elite talent that gets you at the Big 12 level. Yeah. So always kind of elude him. But.
And that was frustrating too, because he had talented guys that 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, Brackens, Garrett. Wes Johnson, and then they never responded for some reason.
Hey, I wanted to mention to you that
I'm
here to help you out with your low-carb diet.
Really? Do you have some tips for me?
No, I just got some pork loin out in the lobby.
Low carbs in the pork?
Yeah, low carbs in the pork, man.
I'm just going straight protein,
It's all protein, baby.
I got up and ran the smoker this morning.
God bless you. Did you really?
Yep.
You didn't have to do that for us.
Yeah, but just I wanted to make it feel like a tailgate today.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah.
Gene does all of our cooking at the tailgate.
He seems like the guy who's in charge.
Yep. He's in Ames. So he's in Ames, right? So a lot of our guys that come to our tailgate come from Eastern Iowa and all over the state. And so Gene's the close guy, right? So he's in Ames. He's got the Traeger grill, and he's absolutely fab. I mean, the man knows how to smoke a pork loin.
Is the Traeger the way to go?
I think the pellet grill is the way to go. If you don't want to sit and tend and be there all the time, you can make an event out of it. But it's smoking for dummies, man. Like even salmon. I'll put a piece of salmon on there and leave it on for an hour and never look at it. And it comes off really nice smoked. My wife likes it anyway.
Because I had to throw my old smoker away because it was just a piece of trash. I started smoking meat last summer, so I'm not an expert on this, but I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
And I was given, honestly, my brother-in-law bought this old guy who died's house, and there were a couple of smokers, and so he gave it to me. I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And this thing, the temperature would go up and down 100 degrees, and I just, I couldn't, it was so hard, I was just like, forget this. And
that's the key to smoking pork, you know, you've heard it before, but if you apply low and slow and the appropriate amount of time, then you get a good flavor. If you do it too high, too fast, it starts to dry. Dry is like shoe leather.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah. The other thing I do is I brine it.
What's that mean?
Salt water. Just a little bit of salt and some water. I can give you the recipe, but it's like a tablespoon of salt per pound of meat. Just cover it with water, put some pepper in it as well, and then do a low and slow smoke. So it really works out well because it's moist is what's really key.
So let's say it's an 11 o'clock kick. Okay. Mm-hmm. You guys are having a big tailgate.
Mm-hmm.
When do you get up?
Well, we head over about 7 or 6:30.
When does the smoking process begin?
Just a couple hours, 2.5 hours. I've got it done in a pellet grill.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't have to
do it. It's not an all-day deal.
No, and you know, if you want to do ribs, you can put them on, set it right, go golfing, come back, and they're done. You don't have to fiddle with it all.
And I don't have to worry about that burning my house down.
No, it's keep it away from the house. But
yeah.
You have to plug it in. It's got to be electric, you know,
because
it runs a fan and that sort of thing. But
last year we did about, 80, 100 chops?
Yeah,
for an early start.
That's
game.
Right. We brought those and did them on a Weber at the game. We did bought chops from the pork tent down at the state fair, and then
leftover from the state fair.
Fair, Have you ever had those?
Pork chop on a stick?
Pork chop on a stick?
I have. I had one last year.
Oh, they're good.
I came and was I was wearing an apron for you guys last year for a while.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I heard you can do that again this year.
Yeah, I am. I'm planning on it.
Yeah. So we bought some. We bought some pork chops on a stick and prepared them for a party.
Will you guys be there at the state fair?
Yep. I work at the national organization, but I always help out the Iowa pork guys, right?
Yeah.
Just up the street. And so I'm one of the money takers, so they don't let me near the grills, but I do get to greet all the folks coming through and help them get their food paid for and chosen and get on through the line. But it's amazing. I think, what's the 65,000?
Yes, 65 to 70,000.
Probably 65,000 chops.
Pork
in
chops
days.
On a stick.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the best thing there, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get a lot of stuff that'll kill you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a lot of stuff that's dry and tough, like a turkey leg. You can do that, too, but that's not good. It's just there.
Yeah. You guys, you sent me some crazy stats. For real. Like for instance, this one really popped out at me, okay? That one in nearly 12 Iowans has a job tied to the pork industry.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that. I mean, I knew the pork industry was big, but I would have never guessed there was that many people that are employed by it.
Yeah, to give you an example, like in Ames, I think they say that the ratio of veterinarians per capita in Ames is the highest anywhere in the world. And obviously, there's more than just swine, but a third of the swine produced in this nation are produced in the state of Iowa. But you think about all the sort of support services, whether it's feed manufacturing, nutritionists, truck drivers, people that install equipment, build buildings, maintenance,
accounting.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, they're businesses, right?
Yeah.
They're done on the farm, but they're businesses, so they have to have all those same functions that any business that we traditionally think of. And I think people tend to forget that.
Yep.
And then when you put on top of that all the packing facilities that we have in the state as well, right? And that takes a lot of folks to work there. So, it adds up really quick, and it's a big economic driver. And Iowa's the number one state, so
I mean, I'm looking at the economic contributions right here, and I mean 12.2 billion and added.
Iowa pork producers was wondering about this 2 years ago, and so they sponsored a company to do a study, and they drilled down to about 20 counties. An example is you spoke with Brady Reichs here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Brady's from, was in here.
From Chickasaw County.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like one out of every 10 jobs in Chickasaw County was associated with pork production. And it's a huge deal. So
especially rural communities, as a way to keep rural communities alive, also as a way to keep young people on the farm, right? This ability to be contract growers, to have finishing sites on your farm where you're also a row crop farmer, and then you also have a site where you get the resulting manure to be put back on your land, right, to be a natural fertilizer versus buying commercial fertilizer. And so that's bringing a lot of young people, allowing a lot of young people to stay on the farm, especially when the last 3 or 4 years, I mean, crop farming, corn prices have been low, soybean prices are low. And so this is a really nice additional source of income for a lot of farmers around the state.
That one thing I've learned talking with all of you guys, which I kind of knew, but I don't think I had a great grasp on, is just how it all works together. You were talking about with the manure, and it's just just a constant circle.
Yeah. Cycle, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to keep telling our story about this sustainability thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Because when I started in the industry, you go down the road in Iowa, and there was a lot of farms have 200 to 300 hogs out by the red barn. Every time it rained, it cleaned off the concrete that was outside of the barn. And, you don't have to think much about where that manure went to. Today, you build a barn and you think about that manure not as something to get rid of, but something you want to save. So it goes through slats, gets stored underneath the barn or out in the lagoon. But about now, you'll start to see manure moving out into the field. And no time during the winter has there been a discharge like there had been with those smaller open facilities going down the creek. So it has to contribute to water quality problems in a much, much less dramatic fashion than before. That combined along with farming practices make it a real sustainable thing. So you take Bill talked about investment. Today, if you want to build a hog barn, the typical hog barn would cost you $750,000 to build. And if you wanted to populate and grow those pigs, it'd take you about, $250,000 to fill it up mm-hmm. and grow them to, and if you end up at the end and you lose $10 a head, I mean, that's a market risk that a lot of new young farmers can't take. And so what they do is they work with people like we mentioned Brady. Brady owns the pigs and he takes all that market risk. He and his family do. Mm-hmm. And then he's got other farmers like Adam that was with him that, man, I just like to take care of pigs and I need this manure out in my field and I'll do that part and I can get started in the farming business. So that's what Bill's talking about, how you get started by sharing that risk with amongst a number of different parties.
Yeah, I actually have a brother-in-law down in Decatur County who has a farm. Mm-hmm. And he just put up a couple of barns. Oh. He's doing that now.
Yeah.
He's housing pigs.
Good.
Yeah.
Good deal. So
I wanted to invest in it. I didn't have enough money, though. I'm doing the sports writer thing.
Yeah, but your wife's a veterinarian.
She is, but she's the wrong kind of veterinarian.
Yeah, little things, right?
Yeah, she, you know what? She, it was fun to watch her go through vet school because she's a rural kid like I was, and she grew up like her grandparents were farmers. And so she grew up on the farm, and she really had an interest in large animals. But she weighs 110 pounds. It's hard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's really hard work when you weigh that much. Because I remember when she was going through school, you had to do it all. I mean, there was one time she had to like learn how to tackle a ram, like you know.
Yeah.
I think if she weighed 150 pounds, I think she would have done mixed or particularly large.
But. Yeah, yeah. These, I mean, even with pigs, when you get in with sows, you know, they'll be 400 or 500 pounds, right? And in a pretty small space. So there's a lot of things that we have to do to make sure that people are kind of protected in terms of when they work with that size animal. Cause it is it's a risky business, but it's one that we spend a lot of time in training to help make sure that people can stay safe when they are working with them. So
Chris, have you ever seen on Iowa, the Iowa helmets, they got ANF?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I'm very familiar with
that.
You
ever seen the other one for Iowa State? AHF?
Yes, I have. Somebody
actually helping farmers?
Some guy showed up at one of my Cyclone Fanatic events and gave me one of those shirts that I guess Iowa like outlawed or something like that. You know what's funny? You bring that up, and all my buddies who are farmers get so fired up about that. I think it's hard for a casual person who's not in the industry to really understand, but that, I mean... So why did you bring that up, Gene? Because
I just think it's an important distinction. There's nothing, no other reason.
What is the difference, though? I mean, how important? For real, we have a lot of Iowa Staters listening to this. Yeah. Let's educate them on that relationship and how important it is to
first. I don't want to minimize what Hayden Fry did. Hayden Fry stepped in and promoted agriculture at a time when it was really, really important. Agriculture was going through a tough time in 79 through 83, and that's when that started. So that I respect him for that.
Good
and
intentions.
I respect, great that's, intentions.
That, early on in that program, that was a very cool thing.
Yep. But when you look at what Iowa State does, I don't have the statistics about how many people work in the swine industry that actually graduate from Iowa State, but it's a high number. And Iowa State's a land-grant college, and by a land-grant college, they are chartered to educate people in all things agriculture through mm-hmm. both in-class research and then extension reaching out to really be a conduit for that stuff that's discovered in the university and how do you put it in applied fashion. So there's an extension group. There's something called the Iowa Pork Industry Center that's really a group of people at Iowa State. And they're well known around the world in terms of their expertise in the swine industry. But they also have a group of five people that reach out to farmers around the state and teach them about how to run the technology. Today, you know, I was just in a meeting the other day where we had an expert come in and he put in what we call temperature hobos, which is a little device that sits in there and every 20 minutes it measures what the temperature is and humidity and inside mm-hmm. the barn. Mm-hmm. And what he's talking about to us was ventilation rates and the speed of of which air needs to move to make sure there's good air mixing. But also, he's saying, and here's your target range. And he showed from when a pig was 40 pounds to when it's 260 pounds that he wanted us to operate within a degree and a half range all the way through that period of time because that's ideal for the pig. That's what the buildings today are delivering. And the technology delivers today. It's all about making sure that the pig is more comfortable, having a more comfortable life, because that makes it more efficient for a hog farmer too. So high levels of sophistication in these.
Bill.
And just the, and I would, Chris, I was just going to add in just the opportunities for young people. So folks that, you know, they have kids, they're going to school and trying to figure out where they, you know, what they're going to do. Agriculture is just such a hot place for jobs these days.
Right? Oh, I bet.
The placement rate out of Iowa State, out of the College of Ag, is like 98%.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And compared to other careers. Right. I mean, think of what I was in journalism. Nobody's getting jobs.
I mean,
they're all getting laid off.
I mean, you got to be pretty bad not to get a job coming out of Iowa State in agriculture. And part of that, it's not only here at Iowa State, but just nationwide. Agriculture in general generates about 60,000 new jobs a year. And we've only got about 40,000 kids that are graduating in agriculture across all those land-grant institutions a year. So we've got this big gap, right? We've got room for more kids in agriculture.
And this jobs across the board. Like, you need more than just guys out there raising the hogs.
Yep, which is important, right? Yep. But just like Gene mentioned before, you got to have the guy that manage all of this transportation. We have over 1 million pigs a day on the road somewhere in the country, moving around between farms or to a processing plant. So there's 1 million hogs moving a day. There's only about 165 pigs on any one load, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, imagine the amount of trucks and the logistics that goes with that, right? And the coordination that takes. And so all of those functions, I think people tend to think of, you know, they just tend to think that it's only about working in the barn, but it's all these other things that we need, that we hire the translog, you know, the transportations, the supply management kids, all the different aspects. And then if you have that ag connection or that ag background and training, those opportunities are out there in a big way. So
you're a national pork guy.
Yeah.
What's a day like for you, Bill?
Yeah. So my job is vice president of producer services. So I oversee everything that's kind of producer facing with what we do with this national checkoff program. So all producers pay into this mandatory checkoff. It's like, it's 40 cents per every $100 of value when you market a hog. And so I oversee the producer side of that, which is we do a lot of things in producer education, workplace safety. We also have national certification programs, right, that reassures the public that we're doing the right things. They're called like pork quality assurance, PQA. I think one of the guys probably talked about that before. So we have these national certification programs, and then we also have these – so – all of our consumers are so much more interested in how the animal's being raised and how it's been being treated. And so we do a lot in trying to help producers tell their message through something we call Operation Main Street, where we train producers like Gene to be able to go out and talk to their friends and neighbors and dietitians and all these food bloggers, all these people that really influence people's decisions on how they think about pork and how they use pork, to have them to be able to talk to that consumer, because consumers really trust farmers. The research shows that, you know, we believe in farmers. We think they do the right thing. And so when farmers talk about what they do, it really increases their confidence that the animals are being treated right and that they can really trust the product.
How much more do people care about that stuff compared to, say, 15, 20 years ago?
It's night and day difference.
I figured.
Times 30.
Yeah. I would say 10 years ago, it wouldn't have hardly been on our radar. And then since then, you know, people have just the millennial, you know, kind of label millennials, right? But millennials are very interested in understanding where their food comes from. They'll buy food based on and pay more for food based on the story that's behind it.
If it's made in Iowa or...
Made in Iowa. Yeah, anything that would identify it to something that's important to them. And so that's it's been evolutionary in the last 10 years about that. Around the last 10 years for that.
Yeah, there's moves like local food and it just people wanting to be more aware. But the line of transparency that wants to start coming into food now, where retailers are wanting to be able to say, to trust that it's being sourced the way I'm making a claim, because my customers want me to say, they want me to sell them pork raised in this way, or that maybe it, I want to understand how that animal's health was during its life. And so you see guidance from government on trying to make sure that we use antibiotics appropriately.
Yeah.
And then we have to document at the farm how that's been done. And I don't think there's anybody that disagrees with the fact that if an animal doesn't feel well, we really owe it to that animal to make sure it's well cared for. And when we care for it and we say administer an antibiotic, people want to know that, well, is there any trace of that in the meat? And
absolutely.
How do you have to make sure, what practices do you go through to make sure that that is the case? And the FDA gives us guidance on that. But there's going to be more and more transparency that somebody at the retail level is going to be able to look and say, that's what happened to that piece of pork way back when.
Yeah, that's where it came from. That's the plant it went through. That's the producer that produced it. All of that's becoming a kind of what the future is really looking like. So.
Yeah, I always get annoyed being from Southwest Iowa and living up here. There, I often feel like rural people get forgotten about. Not all the time. I don't want to do a mass generalization, but I want to just like ring neck sometimes and be like, do you have any idea how smart that farmer is?
Yeah.
And like how much that actually goes into that. And I'm speaking for a lot of my friends and their dads and stuff like that. And the way you guys are describing this, I mean, there's just, it's a lot more than just raising a pig up and slaughtering it and eating it. Like there's just so much.
When you get together with people that are your friends, you say, what do you do? Well, I'm just a farmer. You've heard that statement. I'm just a farmer. But the typical farmer today has $1.5 million turnover, annual sales. And if you owned a business and it was $1.5 million annual sales, you'd go, I'm a business owner, right? Farmers are business owners. And we just got to start looking at them that way. That's why they do what they do. And it's an important thing. But they do it because they can make a living out of it as well. And we're a commodity-driven business. And they're going to look for ways to share risk all the time and reduce costs all the time. And manure gets a bad rap from my perspective. Manure is a great addition to soil. It improves soil health. You use manure as a fertilizer, it reduces runoff because it makes a structure, and you know the agronomist can tell you all about how that works, but it improves water permeability and water holding capacity. And all of that leads to a better corn crop.
Yeah.
And so when people talk to me about how hog farmers impact the water, that's what gets my hair in my neck up a little bit, because I really realize that. And then I got to settle back down because I got to tell them the story. I can't just get mad at them because they don't know.
They don't. That's the thing. Most people don't get it.
And we talk a lot about Iowa, but 30 to 35%, somewhere in that range, of all the people in the United States live in the top 25 metro areas in the state. Those people rely on us to produce their food, you know? And, you know, I think the average farmer in the U.S. produced enough food for like, I don't know, 25 people in the 50s. Yep. And today it's some like 190 people.
Wow.
And
that's incredible growth.
Yeah. It's a tremendous change.
Yep. All the work done by basically 2% of the population. Farmers only make up about 2% of the U.S. population these days. So
what do you think people wonder about hog farmers, Chris?
What do I think they wonder about hog farmers? That's a really good question. Well, I think that the one thing I always pick up on is kind of what you were just alluding to, is I think a lot of people think, I don't want to say a lot, but I think some people think like that farmers are polluting not necessarily hog farmers, but I think like, what pesticides are they putting on that, and how is that impacting our water? And it drives me nuts, because I have two brother-in-laws that are farmers, I have friends that are farmers, and like they're obsessed with not harming the environment.
Yeah,
right.
You know, because the environment is how they make a living, and that's how they feed their families, and that's how they feed our families. And that's the thing to me that I always try and get the message across, that like these are some of the most environmentally friendly people in the world.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, back when Bill and I were younger, in the 70s, much younger. You know, the Secretary of Ag then said, fence row to fence row, farm everything.
Yep.
Because it was the time when commodities were really high. And what it, our practices back then were make fields black. And when it rained, it ran off, took topsoil with it. Yep. And practices have evolved that really changed that that movement of soil. I think the amount of soil that leaves an Iowa field today is 30% less than it was in 1980. Still means that there's time for, you know, there's room for opportunity. But the improvement that we've made is really dramatic. So
yeah, when you think back in those days when you would use the mowboard plow, you'd make at least two or three passes over the ground before you could actually plant. And now many don't even make a single pass, right? They got these no-till tillers. Yep. That can plant without even having to do any additional work from the fall, right? I mean, it's just incredible in terms of the, everybody talks a lot about sustainability and just the advancements that we've seen in the responsible use of the land and in production. And I think, again, it comes back to, we just don't do a good enough job about telling our story. And so the extremists and the folks who are really on the edge, right, really shout loud. And, you know, we just got to do a better job of make sure just, people have the real facts about it versus
absolutely.
Just listening to the really loud voices.
You know, with all this, I think this is all really important, but I also want to talk about Horton Tucker.
So I have one more farm question.
Okay.
I really do. And then we'll talk about Horton Tucker. What fascinates me is I often will go back and come harvest, like I'll ride around with my brother-in-law. Every once in a while, they let me drive the combine. And every year, it's like the technology picks up. And it's like, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Like, we got a new little computer up in here or whatever. So how has your job, Gene, changed over the years? That's what I'd like to know, because of technology. Like, how has it made it easier, more efficient?
Yeah.
At all?
I'm just trying to choose which example. You know, today I can sit wherever I'm at, look at my cell phone, and the guy I work for has a farm in Michigan, and I can see the temperature in the building in Michigan.
Man.
And I can see the amperage draw of a motor and get some idea of, hey, that's starting to draw more amps. Maybe we got to do some maintenance or might even need to be replaced. Today I can look at output from the feed mill and know what the grind size is for corn, because I know that if I get it close to 450 to 500 microns and I've got a low variability, that I'll improve how the feed conversion, what that means is how many pounds of feed it takes to put on a pound of pork. And I'll use that technology. And used to be before, you'd grind corn like using a hammer on a rock, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Just make it smaller. But today the sophistication of what we can measure is so much different. And as I talked about with, you know, the temperature ramping, as a pig gets older, it wants to be cooler, and our systems, you know, like fans and coolers and misters, all try to make sure that it operates within a very small range through that period of time. And our understanding of what variation means to a pig, you know, if it's hot and then it's cold, on average, it looks like it's comfortable, but it's really not, because it's experienced the hot and the cold kind of thing.
Yeah. Man, a lot to chew on.
Yep,
there.
Genetics is a different deal. Like, and you know, when I started in the industry, you'd probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of an average pig would have 2 inches of back fat underneath its skin, between its loin on along its back, and today, if it's 7/10, it's a little bit fat. So what that means is we have less of that. Right. But also it means that that you can put on a pound of lean much less expensively than you can a pound of fat. So we can provide a more nutritious product at a lower cost as well. So, but we can't get too low. Can't ever forget the factor that vitamin F, vitamin fat.
Okay, I would have never known
there
that.
Is no F.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vitamin F is the flavor. Profile improves the flavor profile of pork.
Yep. The color and the marbling of the pork is really important. Like when you,
oh yeah, I see that all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if it's got a little more redness to it and you see a little bit more fat and marbling going through it, you're,
that's what moisture. You call that.
Yeah. Okay. It's moisture holding capacity is better. And then you're
now gonna, I know that the next time I see that and I'm like, what's that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's supposed to happen.
That's a good thing. When you can find that pork in the retail case that has a little bit of that more marbling, a little bit more color,
that's good.
Your likelihood of having that better eating experience goes up, right? Especially if you cook it right to 145. 145 degrees.
Yeah, and that's new, right?
Key. Yep. 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 Just the last few years, U.S. Yep. We've always kind of known in the pork industry, but for a long time, the USDA really was resistant to putting that claim out there, but we finally got them bought in. So now when you see new thermometers and cookbooks, you see a lot about cooking pork to 145 is safe, and it's probably going to be the best eating experience you can have. It's more like that medium rare. It's got a little pink in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like you can think about the same way as when you cook a steak, right? And that's a key piece of it. And something he always gets right in that.
Today's pork is cooked to 138, wrapped in foil, put in a cooler, covered with a, and finished cooking that way.
Perfect.
Yep.
So I can't wait.
It might be 145, maybe not.
I'm hungry already.
That's been that's a difference maker for us, for people to not have a dry pork chop a dry loin, right? If they can get that temperature right, and we can get more people to think about using a thermometer and doing that temperature set, that's a big plus for us in terms of people's experiences. You know, average U.S. consumer only buys fresh pork just a little over six times a year, which to us seems ridiculous, right? Because we're buying it constantly.
Yeah, but
three times a week in football season.
yeah. So there's a big opportunity for us.
I did find even more last year when I started the smoking, that the easiest thing to smoke well was the pork loin. Like it was super, it was very low maintenance for me, and it always tasted good, no matter if I overcooked it a little bit, undercooked it. It always tasted good.
A good Boston butt as well. You know that a loin is you know, a pretty defined piece of meat, and it's one that the muscles are all pretty constant mm-hmm. through a good portion of it. Shoulder, we call the Boston butt, is more complex, because you imagine how many different ways a shoulder can move, so it has to have muscles to pull each direction. It has more connective tissue, and that's where low and slow works in a different way. It's not necessarily for dryness, although you want to do it low and slow for that. But the other reason you want to do it is because it actually cooks that connective tissue. And then once it busts through 180, if you bring it up to 180 really slowly and it busts through it slowly, that's when you get nice pulled pork, because you can just pull it apart, you know, just like a roast beef, but it's a big piece of meat. That's also a good one. It's a forgiving one to cook too.
Okay.
You just got to be patient with it. I mean, that's a smoked loin you can do in 2 to 3 hours. A good butt with pulled pork, you got to do it over 6 to 8 hours.
So what I started doing with the loin, and maybe this is cheating, but I would pull it out at about 110
mm-hmm.
and I'd chop it up and put some, it kind of make
into chops, like, or into small pieces,
into chops.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And I would make it kind of tasted like a burn in type deal when I put it.
Oh yeah.
In.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I started to do.
Yeah.
I really like doing that, because it would crystallize a little bit on the outside, depending on what seasonings or whatever I would put on it.
Yep. A little barbecue sauce will have that too. Today you'll have some Old West dipping sauce.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Oh, we want to talk about Horton Tucker, though.
Yeah, we do.
And you excited for this Horton Tucker?
I am. So I want to know, who do you think has the best vertical, Tucker or Wigginton?
Probably Wigginton.
Because there's not as much to move.
Well, yeah, and he's smaller. I would guess he has the best vertical.
Yeah.
Because
Horton Tucker's still going to be a lot of air, isn't there?
Horton Tucker's just a larger human being.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that all my years of watching basketball, that dunk that he did.
Oh, the Oklahoma game.
Oh, man. That was unbelievable. I don't know how it finally ended up ranked for the year, but it should have been easily in the top five, because that was one of the most incredible dunks I've ever seen. The other one I would go back to, too, is because I go back so far as Jeff Grayer. I can remember Grayer playing in a Creighton game before he'd hurt his knee, which he actually hurt his knee in that Creighton game, but later on. But he had a dunk that was pretty incredible.
Who's the best player you think you've ever seen?
So for Iowa State, I would probably go with Grayer before he hurt his knee.
Yeah, that's what most guys say.
I saw, his athleticism. I remember the Big 8 tournament one year against Kansas. He just went up over Manning, and it was like one of those things you always remember. from a game. Just incredible athleticism. And he was like the most approachable guy, right? He was just a nice guy that just had incredible talent. And I think it was such a shame, you know, what he could have done in the NBA if he had not had that knee injury, I think would have really probably made him closer to being one of those kind of legends of the game. I think he was just that talented. He was a lot of fun to watch.
Those darn injuries. I always think about if Niang wouldn't have broken his foot in the tournament that year, that's the one that always sticks for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It could have gone to the Final Four.
Yep.
He's having fun.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's a good guy.
Fantastic, right?
Yeah. He's a good guy.
I hope he makes it now that he was player of the year, right? The G League.
So. Yeah, he was in their first team.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch all those guys and watch them grow up and have all the success that they're doing. And hopefully we've got Wigginton and Horton Tucker playing in the NBA in a few years.
Yeah.
That would mean they did
a couple
well.
Years here first.
Yeah, that would mean that they did well at Iowa State if they make it that far.
Yeah.
Well, guys, it was awesome.
Right.
Is there anything that we left out that you want to get in? Or
no, it's just your interest in our industry is really appreciated.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And being
guys.
A voice for us or helping us have a voice.
I'll do anything
is a really
for
good
you
idea.
Guys. It's important to me, too, because I got a lot of friends and family who are heavily involved.
Yeah. All right.
So. And I think just the longevity of Cyclone Fanatic now and what you guys do, either between game day and during the week, your show that you do, I think it's just really doing great things that really echo how all of us really feel. You talk a lot about how all of us really feel as passionate as we do about Iowa State and how it really blows people away, I think, in so many other parts of the country, right? Why
it's incredible.
So many people show up so consistently in that football stadium in spite of what the record is. I think it's you guys do a great job of telling that story for us. And so,
thank you. I
that's
appreciate
pretty cool.
that. Yeah, it's
really enjoy it.
We, you know, what's funny about it, what we do is there's not many places where a independent media company or whatever you want to call us could even exist.
Mm.
It's because Iowa State fans are so loyal and they care so much that they keep clicking and they want the information. And
The Matt Campbell story when he came here the year before.
Yeah.
And he called,
the story is he called his wife and said, this is the place to be.
Yeah. It's a neat deal. And I think 2018 and all sports, I think wrestling will be a lot better.
Yeah.
Women's basketball, I think, is going to be back in the tournament this year. They've got some really nice young players who are getting better every day. So,
good deal.
Let's just get August here.
All right.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, man. Chris.